Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor. I'm Michelle Pache and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is August 6, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Rice. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now, let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and experiencing forgiveness.
Well, thank you for that introduction, young lady. It's awesomely delightful to have everybody who chooses to join us every day to do that. We are blessed, and just the simple fact that we get to have this conversation 5 days a week in support of people is such a gift for us. You know, over the years of doing this work, there was always a challenge, and that was when we go to a new city, being able to support the people that were there that were learning this new way of thinking was a challenge, especially if a support group didn't start. And so now we get the opportunity to support people all over the globe. Anybody in the world that's got a computer and internet access can listen to the show, can ask questions, and get support for the use of these tools. So that's just something I'm really appreciative of, this technology that allows us to do this. And, of course, it also puts into the archives. We've got 4 years of radio shows, almost 4 years now, three and a half anyway, of radio shows in the archives. So hundreds and hundreds of shows that you can go back and listen to just by going to our website and clicking the link. Our website, of course, is www.whyagain.org. And you'll see a link to the radio show. And if you click that link, you can go and look through the archives. We thank Magda and her whole team for the commitment that they have of writing descriptions of the shows and catching us up. There are still some shows that don't have descriptions on it. So if you happen to click into one of those shows that doesn't have a description on it when you go to the website, if you wouldn't mind, after listening to it, writing a brief description of what was on the show so that others will be able to look at it and go, oh, that's what that's about. That's what I'm looking for. That would be really, really appreciated. All support in every direction that anybody chooses to give is very much appreciated and helpful in supporting taking this work to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And probably for me, the biggest thing that I have on my mind today is the activity of the human mind and understanding how that device works. You know, there isn't a device on the planet that if you don't have the brain cells for how it operates and what its core principles are, that you can operate effectively. And the knowledge of how the human mind works has been around for at least 2,000 years, because we can go back to the ancient Aramaic language and we can find descriptions, although, you know, supposedly the unconscious was just discovered a few decades ago. It wasn't just discovered a few decades ago. It was discovered in the West, but it's been known for thousands of years in the East. There was a full description of how it operates. It's built into the language, and how to make this device work for you instead of against you. if you don't know how, you know, if you're just handed a body-mind unit, you come into the world, you come into a world where there's grief and rage and guilt and fear and pain and drama and trauma and abuse, and nobody shows you how to operate the device, then the tendency is to function out of those dynamics of grief and pain and abuse. What we're here to do is to inform people truly exactly how the human mind works, and especially to understand how to keep it as a clean, clear device for building guidance in your life. If the device is tainted with energies that don't belong in it, then the device is always giving you poor guidance, poor information, and poor decision-making capability. And one of the main things to understand is the filter system in the mind. If you go back into the ancient Aramaic language, when they asked this man Yeshua, what's most important in all of this that you're teaching us? You're giving us all this information. What is most important? You'll notice he didn't say calling my name was most important. What he said was, you must have, and the Greeks translated as love, for the Creator, for neighbor, as for self. Well, in Aramaic, it doesn't say that. What it says is you must have rachma. We'll talk about that in a minute. When you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self, in order to maintain the awareness of your human life, there are conditions you must meet within your mind. And if you don't know that they're there, and if you don't know how to meet them, then the slightest hostility or fear can totally obliterate the awareness of your true human life. And our definition of a human life in this work is very simple and straightforward. Hold a newborn child. When you hold a newborn, you get a direct experience of what human life is. What we need to be doing on the planet in order to end the insanity, the slaughter, the murder, the war, the rage, the guilt, the divorce, the abuse, what we need to do is to get people informed as to how their minds work and how to get that mind back on track so that it serves up and supports a human life instead of a non-human life. And in this work, we define a non-human life as someone who appears to have a human body but is not functioning out of love. If one is not functioning out of love, there's no human life present or active in them. And what we're looking to do is to restore people to the awareness that their human lives have never gone away. No matter how crazy their behaviors have been, their human lives have never gone away. And we need to know how the mind works in order to bring back us back into harmony with the awareness of that device. And the number one key is this filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that was called rachma. When that filter is active, then the things that drive the human mind are based in love, and there is an opening through which human life enters our human bodies. If that filter is closed, then human life doesn't come in, and the other two filters tend to run the show. And the other two filters are hostility and fear. Without getting into a full description, and you can go to the website, our website, www.whyagain.org, and if you click the bullseye in the middle of the page and you look down the list, you'll see a link to a schematic of the mind, and it shows the whole filter system. I'm not going to go into the whole thing, except at this point to recognize that the two other filters that can be active in the mind are hostility and fear. And the reason why it's important to understand that is because any situation that you look at through hostility, your mind is limited to one category of guidance. And that is, in hostility, it will always be irritated about what it sees. There will always be agitation and upset. The other filter is fear, and if fear is active, then the mind will always produce output that shows you something threatening about your object of attention. Those aspects are not human. They are not designed for us to operate from. It's something we made up. And so the return to this filter called love gives us the opportunity to see something other than threat and irritation. You'll notice there are certain people that it almost doesn't matter what happens. The slightest violation of the goal they hold for a particular object of attention. And this is a repeat of a power person dynamic when it happens. If a child, and power person is something we bring about or we define and work with in our codependence, interdependence, and interdependence workshop. A power person is someone who had more power over your life than you did and was not functioning as love. And it was perceived as survival. When one functions out of that dynamic, then the chance of human life showing up in their minds is slim to none. And so if the child violated the slightest goal of the power person, what happened is the power person came down on them with both feet. The power person was functioning in a very infantile mind. And that infantile mind within its infantile goals, should the two-year-old violate that goal, then that power person comes down on the two-year-old with both feet. The two-year-old, being trained through hostility and fear, lives 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years later being controlled by that same dynamic. If somebody violates the tiniest infantile goal that they hold, then that person goes off in their tirade of hostility or fear, because the reality their mind serves them coming from their internal dynamics based on their power person is based in threat and irritation. And so, of course, the extreme of that irritation is extreme hostility, where one attacks whoever happens to be handy. And so if you recognize that dynamic happening within your life, then the tool that you want to put to work is the tool of forgiveness. And what forgiveness does is it begins to empty the content of the mind out, that content which keeps us locked into hostility and fear. And as that happens, there's more of an opportunity for content based in love to come forward. And ultimately, if you're really truly going to function out of a human life, you want to get to the point where you discipline your mind to, every time you see a human being, you see what's loving in that circumstance. You see the highest and best in that circumstance. And by seeing and joining with that, you tend to produce different results. Now there'll be those who will say, oh, no, the world's very threatening, and the challenge is, can you start to view yourself as a creator and realize that when you live in threat and you live in fear and you live in irritation, you set up a world that functions the way you are, and that world will function the way you are. It will bring to you exactly what you're holding. What we're looking to do with these tools is to give people the methods and the tools with which to change those dynamics in their lives and to start to see each other and to create a space on the planet where love is the governing force, where human life is the governing force, rather than that old hostility and fear-based mind. One of the big reasons for doing that is because an hostility and fear-based mind creates a very disastrously diseased body. It is the root and the cause of all of the diseases that we experience. And so what we're looking to do is to support people in recognizing and owning their own hostility and fear and to begin to shift out of that through the use of forgiveness. Now, there is a brainwash on the planet that says forgiveness is about how I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, which, of course, is pretty insane and bizarre. We suggest that if you're going to start to engage in forgiveness, that you never forgive anyone ever again, and you never forgive yourself, which shocks most minds because most minds think that forgiveness is about letting somebody else or yourself off the hook. And that's not forgiveness. Forgiveness, that's pardoning, and it's a nice thing to do if you choose to do it. But forgiveness is how you go inside of yourself and remove the root of your hostility or fear. Change the internal dynamic and start to move your perceptual system toward the active presence of love. And as you do that, the whole game of life changes. And so that's what we're here to support. That's what our conversation is about. If you want to access the Tool of Forgiveness and you haven't been there yet, again, go to whyagain.org, click on the bullseye, and a series of links will open. The first link will give you chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that begins the conversation about forgiveness. The second link gives you the actual worksheet process, the how-to, step-by-step forgiveness process. The next 10 or 12 links are all radio shows where we've actually walked somebody through the whole process. So there are at least 10 or 12 free downloads. They're MP3s. You can just download them, put them on your phone or your MP3 player, whatever, your computer, and listen to guidance on how to utilize that worksheet process and how to begin to move into your own mind and remove the root of your hostility and fear is about. And we're delighted that you're here to join with us. And Michelle, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
I don't see Dr. Tim's phone number, but he knows to put his hand up to bring you to, oh, there he goes. Thank you, Dr. Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. We had a lovely time at our support group last night. We had several new people, and one of the new people decided to do a worksheet, and with one silly little worksheet, one silly little 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and some filling in blanks and taking a few breaths and presencing love, she went from a level 8 intensity fear down to a level 4 and found out that she has a lot of resistance to looking at what's next. So we gave her outlines for several different worksheets she can do in the meantime, and it was a wonderful learning example for people in the group. And we had the first half of communication, did you hear what I think I said, as a lecture. And so that stimulated a lot of good discussion, and it was a lovely time once again in our support group.
Awesome. It always just delights me to watch when people start to use that worksheet as to what happens and how things shift and change in the most amazing way. So that's fabulous.
And I got the publicity info for you about your visit here and was reading some of the book reviews, lots of different people saying they were amazed at how simply it works, and a glowing review by Joe Vital about books he's written and how your book was so powerful and has such a useful tool. So that was very nice. Thanks for sending that. We'll see how many people we can put that information in front of before your visit here in at the end of September.
It would be fabulous, and, you know, if we can enlist everybody in supporting and getting new people out to the church. I was talking to the minister this morning, and he was sharing with some of the challenges of how Sunday is now a day where people are doing their football games and their trips to the zoo, and, you know, that it hasn't got much to do with supporting their spiritual lives anymore, that the secular world's kind of taken over. And so I did offer, and for those who are in the Woodstock, Illinois area, we're going to be there in a couple of weeks, actually, I guess about, 4 weeks from now, and doing a full free, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday series of workshops, and then a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing on Saturday. So anybody who'd like to join us, and or anybody who'd like to help to let others know, if you know anybody in the Woodstock, Illinois area, we're kind of out in the northwest side of Chicago. And also, I had talked with Tom about whether we might be able to get some television or newspaper or radio interviews going to sort of see if we can draw some new folks. So if you have any ideas in that regard, Dr. Tim, or maybe anybody in the support group has some contacts and some ideas, it would be awesome to really get the energy cranked up and moving in that direction.
Well, that's the goal, and I will use the materials you sent today to see what we can stir up in that area.
Fabulous. So anything you're seeing in your practice as a theme today, anything to bring to our attention?
Well, the theme so far this morning was the pattern of disassociating, which is different than what you talk about in the worksheet. This is people who actually create a sense that they are not in their body. They depersonalize. They lose touch with feeling the way they normally feel as being a grounded, centered person in their body. And they do that in response to some perceived level of threat. And as we talked about that in two different sessions already this morning, for both people, the trigger for dissociating was the belief they had to defend themselves against somebody else's rage. So we talked about the role of being a victim, and we talked about rage as a drug, and we talked about creating a sense, an actual reality for me that says, I'm not even here, I'm not even in my body. So that's been the theme so far, and we have had some success already with the second person today to cancel a goal to be safe and just watch what happens. And she got directly in touch with what she described as vein-popping anger coming out of her mother, where 5 minutes earlier she had no memories of that age range and her mother. She couldn't remember where she lived. But with a little bit of canceling the goal and breathing, she all of a sudden had much more of an active memory of what she termed vein-popping rage coming from her mother.
Wow.
So maybe you could talk about any of those topics.
Well, of course, the distinction between dissociation and disassociation is an important one. And as you say, the person who disassociates, they create this separation from their bodies, from their pain. My understanding of that process is one where, depending on the different types of abuse one has had, that they actually create a personality, a kind of an energy packet self, made of whatever dynamics they find best adapt to the stress of the situation or the abuse that they're experiencing, and that they cut off from, you know, their, what we might call their normal persona. And it's interesting that those persona shifts, along with them come total and complete shifts in physiology, that they're literally a different physical system in each persona, which you'd think, you know, with the number of years that information's been around, that the medical world, the so-called scientific world, might start to figure out, let's see, we know that in this persona, this body works this way chemically and has this disorders and diseases, and when that persona shift changes or happens, then the chemistry and the physiology is different. Maybe there's something back of chemistry and physiology. Maybe the chemistry and physiology isn't prime, which, of course, it's not. It's all secondary. And so the dissociation is that cutting off from awareness of that real connectedness to their bodies and to the world, where the less dramatic but as important idea of dissociation, I think, impacts virtually the whole population. And our definition, or the way we arrive at this dissociated state, and that is the state where there are certain internal dynamics to my mind that I hide from myself to the point where even if I want to, I can't access them and change them. And that dissociation happens as a result of denial. And our definition, of course, in this work of denial is when I think or speak a thought that lays the responsibility for what I'm experiencing internally on something outside of me, then I'm in denial. So when I say, you know, they made me mad, you hurt me, you made me sad, you really upset me, that really caused me a lot of pain. All of that language, which is basically the whole language of the culture, is denial. It's blaming everybody else for what's going on inside of us, and this, because of the evidential nature of the mind, because the mind only gives us the information we give it permission to, and our words are key to that. When we say, you made me mad, what we're in essence saying is, mind, the only information you're allowed to show me is that they are the cause of my anger. And my mind will show me a picture where they're the cause of my anger. Of course, if I start slowing down a little bit and think about it, gee, I've been through this particular piece of anger 47 different times with 82 different people. Maybe I'm involved in my life. Maybe this is about me because it's been happening over and over and over and over and over again. And, gee, I'm starting to discover that I'm the only one that was there every time. As I start to open that space, then I can begin to chop away or chip away at the dissociated dynamics within myself, can come back into relationship with what I've been hiding from myself, and I can change those dynamics. And that changes absolutely everything. And the key tool that comes out of the ancient Aramaic for how to do that is called forgiveness. That the forgiveness tool is the tool with which I take responsibility instead of live in denial, and I learn to access the parts of me that otherwise remain hidden and in hiding are absolutely unchangeable. So someone who says, you know, I'm just tired of this rage, I'm tired of this pain, I'm tired of this fear, I want to get over it, I want to get finished with it, can't change the part of their mind that creates that dynamic within themselves until they're willing to come back into relationship with it. And if they're dissociated from it, that part of the mind, because it's not theirs to change, can't be changed. The forgiveness tool from the first century Aramaic, and to me it's just such a monumental piece of the puzzle, the forgiveness tool from the first century Aramaic is how to come back into relationship with that dissociated part of the mind. And when we come back into direct relationship with that part of the mind, instead of only seeing it when it's placed in our brain's image of someone else, then in direct relationship, those parts of the mind become changeable. We don't have to live with those things anymore. So to me, that would be the real key importance of that dynamic of denial and dissociation and undoing that. So just to realize that every time I think, I just have to think it. Boy, when she does that, does she ever peeve me? Yeah, when he said that, he really upset me. Yeah, when that happened over there in the Middle East, I was so afraid. Yeah, when that battle took place, when I heard about what happened to those people, that just made me so enraged. All of that is denial and dissociation. And to me, one of the things that's important to recognize is the mind we bring to an event either brings healing or reinforces that event. So if I bring a mind of rage to something, some atrocity on the planet, I just brought more atrocity. I just brought more unconscious energy that's going to tend to stimulate and bring about more of that particular atrocity. When I can handle my own fear, rage, sadness, grief, or what have you, then I can bring a mind of love. I can bring a human mind to that event. And when I bring a human mind to that event, I contribute to changing that event. And so that's what we're looking to do, to support people more and more and more often and more easily, bringing forward the acquiescence of love, and in so doing, changing the game on the planet. So is that kind of the thing you were thinking about elucidating on, Tim?
Exactly. And the power behind it, you know, the essence of all of it is, at deeper and deeper levels, the more I can become aware that I'm the one creating it, the more liberty I have to choose differently. And It's quite a gift. It's quite the gift. I'm seeing it over and over again in my own life. And, you know, we've heard about it a few times on the show. I'm going through a process of expanding my office and trying to make room to have some groups here, and there's deconstruction and reconstruction and poor communication and anger and all kinds of things flying all around. People upset that
this you mean to tell me with all those goals that people are getting opportunities to learn forgiveness? How shocking.
They have the opportunity, the vast majority of people around me in this setting don't even know about the tools of forgiveness, so there's opportunity, but there's no possibility because they won't look at the tools and they won't apply them. But the critical piece here is that when I came in yet again today to my office after having been at the group late last night and probably spent 3 hours yesterday during the day working on stuff that had been torn apart that should have been put back together. And I came in again this morning, and the place had been left in a shambles by the people who were supposedly being paid to put it back together and clean it up. And we had no internet and no phone and no office for my practice manager to work. And so I did some breathing, and I set to do some tapping, some energy tapping that I know how to do. And I found myself in the middle of the tapping, shifting and thinking, I should just go smash this light fixture. And it just shocked me. I mean, I haven't felt that level of this energy urge with a thought like, let's go break something or throw something in a long, long time. And so I just kept breathing and tapping. And then when my friend came in to do the energy work on me, it's Wednesday morning and we work on each other in the morning, we discovered that behind that rage was fear in me, and fear in me about confronting certain people who are responsible for this thing being wrong, that not being put together, no phone service, no computers, the light fixture not being there, certain things being painted that weren't supposed to have any paint on them, etc. And it went into my fear of being angry and not being a worthwhile person, and my fear of having a healthy relationship with these people being destroyed. And in the middle of my release, I got the shift, and I started to see pieces of the lecture from last night on responsibility communication, and I had this wave of relief come over me when I thought, oh, well, I know how to do this. Instead of going and talking to this person about what they did and how they didn't do it right and how they're responsible and how it made me angry or how it inconvenienced me, I can just do a responsibility communication. And as soon as I thought of it in those terms, I felt the energy flow off of me. I felt the anger dissipate, and I thought, oh, I can do that. And I've been 50 or 70 pounds lighter ever since, you know, 9:45 this morning, when I had that shift and canceled the goal to get this person to realize they were wrong and that they have to change this or fix this or pay for this. And my new goal is to simply communicate effectively about what I'm learning and how I had anger resonated in me that I want to heal, and I had fear resonated in me that I want to heal. And as soon as that became my goal and my purpose for the communications that happen later today and tomorrow, I felt 50 or 75 pounds lighter. It's a phenomenal process.
Very powerful. And, you know, with this last intensive that we did, and I think it's going to become a new workshop that we'll do every year. It's the first time we've done it as part of our summer season. It's codependence to interdependence communication practicum. And to bring that in, we did several sessions where we actually, you know, had two people at the front of the room who had some kind of conflict going on and walked them through the whole forgiveness process, or pardon me, through the whole communication process. And it was just so powerful to do the two of them together. The way they juxtaposed with each other was just really awesome. And to just watch somebody when they actually use the tool, that they climb down inside themselves, drill down into the part of the mind in need of healing instead of staying focused in the outer world. It's just really powerful to watch how that happens. And so congratulations. That's pretty awesome. And, you know, did you say you watched the first half of communication last night or the second half?
It was the first half last night.
Oh, cool. So then I'll make sure to get the new, because out of this week's workshop, you know, the communication tool has basically been the same for the last, I don't know, since I first did that workshop 10, 15 years ago. And so we did do some refinements. So I'll make sure to get that new set of steps for the communication to you. And it's got some, you know, small but important refinements in it. So I'll make sure to get that so it's available for next week's Mindshifters group.
All right, great. I look forward to seeing it.
And I'll send it via email, and, you know, perhaps even it might be something you could send out to the group that you expect will be there next week, and they can be kind of playing with it between now and next week's program, so it'll be even fresher in brain cells and become more meaningful and more useful. It really is, in my experience, if you can get two people who, with integrity, will really truly do that, it is one of the most powerful tools of everything that we teach. And what I see happening with it is that, yeah, when we're down in our ego selves and our separated selves, forgetting that the fact is we're connected with these people around us, we think we have different goals and we've got all kinds of hostilities and fears and griefs and rages that we've never dealt with that separate us. And what I've observed over and over again with that tool is it's almost like watching while people drill down into their own content and realize, ah, this is something I need to heal, at the same time, they climb out of the non-being self into the self that is connected with this other person. And that just resolves all kinds of things. It's as amazing in its impact as the reality management sheet, the forgiveness process. It's mind-boggling.
Well, as I said, the key for me is at deeper and deeper levels where I tune into the actuality that I'm creating my own experience, then it gives me greater and greater liberty to change that experience.
Yay, yes, absolutely. Speaking of which, now we haven't had the three of us together on the show since Friday, where I understand that you and Michelle did some pretty monumental work on Friday's show, and so I did hear from Dale. He'll be back with us on Friday again, but anything, any of the fallout or shakeout from that, Michelle, to share, or for you, Dr. Tim, from Friday's show?
We talked about it a little bit last night in our Mindshifter support group. I got feedback from some of the people who were on the call about how valuable they felt it was. I'm not sure, Michael, did you ever get a chance to listen to it?
We have been in intensives and traveling back and forth with people, so I have not listened to it, but I heard it was pretty powerful.
You know,
I heard you sacrificed yourself on the altar of forgiveness.
Just talking to Tim about the opportunity that's presented in that intensive where participants get to role model and practice the tool with your coaching, and the topic that Tim and I were discussing related to the feedback you gave me during one of those sessions. I had multiple. Tim, I did a 16-day intensive in 9 days there because I had a lot of opportunity. And I think it's wonderful that you're able to manage that on your own, because when I was in the thick of it, and even though I've got the paper in my hand and I'm reading the steps and attempting to do them, as we went along, the power person dynamic is showing up that I'm not even aware of. The, fear and hesitancy to connect with people showing up. Like, it felt like there was lots of pitfalls and little traps, even when there was willingness and a commitment to, like, I volunteer for this. I want to work this out. I want some support and let's practice it. And still felt like a hot mess.
Well, I acknowledge your courage, because that's what it takes. And when we don't even have an idea that there's a difference between living out of the truth of who we are as love and the non-being mind and its habits, its hostilities and fears, in the initial phases, it's a big task to even just catch ourselves at it. And to me, that's one of the why we'll do that intensive again with the communication practicum, because, and I appreciate the fact that you were so willing, as Magda was, Magda, powerful work. But the other impact of it in the intensive is everybody's watching, and I think everybody who's in a state of willingness looks to see themselves. And when we get to see ourselves, it's like, ooh, is that what I do? And the modeling of the willingness to step up and face it and bring change is monumental. And, it takes time to build the brain cells for changing that dynamic in your life. It doesn't happen in a week or two or 6 months or a year or 2 years or 5 years. It takes a significant amount of time to make that change, that shift from, 1,000 generations that have lived in the non-being mind. I was talking yesterday about this concept and recognizing that, in my bloodline, when I think about the distinction between being and non-being, that we are functioning, that we are the active presence of love, and that we sometimes function as hostility or fear, and that there is a work to be done to remove the hostility or fear. And what I went back through as an example in my own life was, I think back to my childhood, I had no clue such a thing was possible. I look at both of my parents, neither of them certainly had a clue it was possible. Look at what I knew about my grandparents, and there was no clue there. How many generations has it been since somebody in any of our bloodlines stepped up and said, I'm functioning out of something that's really non-human. I think I'll take out the tool of forgiveness and I'll remove this from my mind. When was the last time you suppose that was conceived of in your bloodline? I know for me the answer is probably never. And here you are with your daughter, and both you and your daughter now have that awareness. Are you perfect at it yet? Is it a done deal? No. You know what? I've been working at it for 45 years, and it's not a done deal for me either. But I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot better than it ever has been. So patience becomes a virtue in the process, and the willingness to just keep putting one foot in front of the other and moving forward is pretty awesome.
So I just printed it out because I'm co-facilitating a couple counseling with a male therapist at 2 o'clock, and that's on the agenda to present that tool and teach them, and maybe I'll have them go through a role play.
It's powerful to give people the experience of dropping into and drilling down into where their problem is, rather than, of course, the world's whole game is pretty much problem solving. Look, if you just change, then I wouldn't have to feel this way, because I'm only feeling this way. It's all your fault. It's because of what you did. I'm feeling this way, so just change your behavior. And, of course, the person who says that has been through that particular feeling, as I said before, 87 different times with 42 different people. but they have no clue that it's theirs. And so, yeah, that's powerful to do. That'd be pretty awesome.
On that note, I thinking that even if myself or others aren't proficient, that at its worst, it is way better to be approaching it from that perspective than, you know, the I'm right, you're wrong, you know, I'm not going to accept blame, blah, 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 that the old paradigm. So it only can continue to improve. And having the other tools available because, as you recall, going through that process actually just brought up even deeper levels of hidden garbage. And, you know, I remember walking away with a list of things to do worksheets on because, you know, it might have started out with frustration. Now I'm all of a sudden I'm dealing with shame. Like, where's that hidden underneath the sadness? So, you know, I think you have to have these other things as backup and tandem to work through when you really are using the responsibility communication tool appropriately for, you know, as designed. It's going to let you see even more.
Well, Michelle, since you bring it up, a couple of the things that we were talking about on Friday, one of them was a very strong reaction you had to the idea that someone was labeling you as different than you thought you were.
Yes.
And did you do any worksheets on that or get any shift in that area?
Well, mostly what it's done is allowed me to hold a thought that kind of like the course in my defenselessness, my safety lies, that if I know I'm loved and I'm practicing and being it the best to my ability, then I really don't have any business, so to speak, about worrying about other people's judgments. That the value, when you said, you know, well, how do I know if that's just not Michael's content providing that feedback, or if, you know, that my perception is accurate for me, and you said something along the lines of how about they both be true? And I got a lot of feedback from other people about that being just a real powerful, concept in terms of like, oh, never thought about they could both be true. Like, that really softens it. And if we watched the first half of Circle of Life last night, and some of that stuff came up in there, Michael, where, you know, you have the demonstration with the quarter, and it's not right and wrong. It's different. And so as the concept, Tim, that you just asked me about, like other people not seeing me the way that I perceive me, it's not that it's wrong. It's just different.
And yet it was a trigger to stir up quite a bit of anger and frustration and defensiveness. And that would be where the key for me would be to say, oh, if all feedback is valid, how can I use this on my side of the equation and take my focus off the other person, and whether or not they want to do their work is up to them. But I just got triggered to feeling defensive, and so I was attacked, so how can I clear up what's on my side of the equation?
Well, that's where, like when I was saying about when we were doing it and then I got the feedback, where all of a sudden this, like, a deeper level of shame came up. And so that, yeah, when I was there. But it's funny because I think I left Sunday night after dinner, and I was calling them before the session was over, like, hey, I have a question about this. So I definitely see where going to an intensive continues to unfold. There's reverberations long after your last day, because it keeps everything seems to be more powerful this week. My course meetings, my mind shifter group, my therapy sessions.
It's definitely cranks the energy up, and that's the idea in being in that space of support. And to me, one of the other dynamics that happens in an intensive is you're literally in an energy field of people who are willing to move through things. And so it gets to be a lot easier to join in that energy field and move through things than when I'm out on my own, you know, doing my own habits and all of that. And, of course, the fact that we're doing the fresh and raw food builds vitality, and elimination moves things faster. Everything is picked up and speeded up. So, yes, that's definitely one of the benefits of doing an intensive. And, of course, we've got one intensive left scheduled for this summer, which will start on the 22nd. So anybody who wants to crank it up to the next level, we've got a 16-day Laws of Living that will start on August 22nd. We're also planning to do a 9-day intensive up in Michigan, in Pinckney, Michigan, just north of Lansing. So anybody that, you know, perhaps isn't in the space to come and make it for the Laws of Living intensive here at Heartland might want to put that on their calendar. The October 31st will be the start date for 9 days, and I think it completes on the 8th of September. So. And we're leaving the title of that workshop. There are several different intensives we could do. We're leaving the title of that Pinckney workshop up to the early adopters. For those who register first, we'll be surveying and see just what topic they would like to see covered. So if you want to have input on which intensive you'd like to see happen, then register for it, and that will open the space for you to have your input to it. So I invite anybody who's listening to the show, come and join us in Pinckney, Michigan. We've got this awesome space. It's a small community, and they have this huge, beautiful house, awesome meeting room. There's pillars on the front of the building on a lake. It's just a beautiful spot, and the end of October should be quite, it'll probably be a little crisp in the air, but it should be a really nice time of year to be in north central Michigan, and we'll be doing a residential intensive there. So, Michelle, anything else to share from your amped up experience of doing your work, and or do we have anything happening in the chat room to be aware of, or anybody in the phone queue that has a question for us at the end of?
Not right now. Chat room's real quiet today, and there's somebody from North Carolina on for a while, but don't with their hand up, but that's been dropped. So we've got about 7 minutes left. I can do that. Of course, we'd invite anybody listening in our support group last night. I brought a new person. Actually, I brought a new person from Africa who's here from Zambia for the month, and I thought I'd introduce it into that part of the world, and she was very appreciative and very intrigued and really resonated. Tony did a wonderful job taking her through a worksheet and the process, and she identified, you know, a significant amount of release of the fear that she was having related to her, worksheet material, and so that was really wonderful. So we got to be talking about the nitty-gritty of the forgiveness and kind of like the technical aspects, like at the core, canceling forgiveness. Is it the whole process, or is it the part where you are canceling the thoughts that ultimately leads to the filter? Because one aspect that we were discussing is like, because the people who don't want to cancel goals, okay, so canceling the goal demonstrates the condition, like having a goal demonstrates the condition that it's lacking in the now. So that's part of, you know, maybe an incentive to say, okay, why would I cancel a goal for my baby to have good health when just having that goal implies that they're sick. So as far as the canceling piece, we were really trying to, like, zero down into what is actually happening in that moment. Because, you know, we put, there's not only me, but other people just want to intellectualize it.
Well, one of the things that if people are in resistance to canceling the goal that I found to be useful is to point out in step 7 of the worksheet, go back and reset a goal. And if that's still perceived as an appropriate goal, they can go back and reset that. But the step of canceling the goal is at least a temporary measure that one takes so that they can look at and heal other parts of their minds involved in that goal. You know, the mind is kind of like the iceberg. We see the top 5%. 95% of it is hidden. And that would be kind of the equivalent of the unconscious. And so if we can get somebody to recognize that, okay, here's the 5% that I see, and the 5% that I see is based on my goal. If I can cancel the goal, then I get to take a look into the other 95%, and maybe I'm going to find something there that as I clean it out, I can change this dynamic. What have I got to lose if in step 7 I just go back and reset the goal? What's the big deal? So I think that can help people to open a space. And then, of course, recognizing that the reason for canceling the goal is because the goal is what filters into awareness those things that formulate our perception. And so, you know, there's some Harvard research we've talked about in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire. The max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits, according to Harvard. And so we see a tiny, tiny bit of what's really going on. And the thing that tells the mind which 9 bits of data it's going to use is our goals. And so when we cancel the goal, we get to look beneath the surface of what we consciously perceive. And I think when you can explain that to people and they get, oh, so if I cancel this goal, the 9 bits that I'm currently seeing is going to collapse, and I'm going to open a space to look at what's underneath, then I think that helps people to make more sense of it and go, well, what have I got to lose? I can always reestablish the goal in step 7 anyway, so why not? See what happens. And, of course, people don't need to believe anything about the process. They don't need to believe it's going to work or it's not going to work or it's going to do anything. Just try it and see what happens. And, of course, we all get to see the monumental results that occur. Does that make sense, Michelle?
I was stifling my yeah, but. because I was thinking, actually, that, well, if you are canceling the goal with knowing that you're going to potentially reestablish it, is that, like, authentic enough or genuine to, like, really be able to glimpse beneath the surface?
Sure, why not? I mean, people could, of course, be inauthentic at any time in the process. But can I authentically cancel my goal while I realize that if I choose to, I can reestablish it? Sure, I think we can. And people can fool themselves as well.
But fair enough.
And, of course, even being able to cancel the goal is a practice that, you know, our culture has never taught us to do that, so it's a practice to engage in. And as one starts, and even if it's a tentative step, it can be moving them in the right direction. And, unfortunately, we're down to just the last few seconds, so we're going to have to close the show out, but this might be a good topic to start the show out with tomorrow and continue the conversation. So if you're up for that, Michelle, if you've got the space, maybe you could just call in and we'll move it forward from here. In the meantime,
sure,
we'll just invite everybody who's ready to take their work to the next level. Jump on our website, whyagain.org, look at the schedule. 22nd, we'll start the Laws of Living Intensive. And in the meantime, bring the strains to the show and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.myangelsradio.com. whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.